Following curiosity is the key to sustaining well-being. Seeing even the familiar in a different way, you are imbued with wonder, the ultimate magic of experiencing what is new. You see the mystery of what lives below, as well as the beauty displayed on the surface of things. And that's a quote from The Imagination Matrix by Stephen Eisenstadt, a book I just happened to be reading at the moment and felt inspired by. I thought I'd share it. Somebody I happen to know, too.
Solid quote.
And with that, what's that?
A solid quote.
With that, welcome to Podcast 40, the House Einstein Podcast 40. We are recording this podcast today on April 10th, 2024. I'm your host, Osman Parvez, with House Einstein, a brokerage based in Boulder, Colorado, with a footprint from the Denver suburbs all the way to Fort Collins, including the mountain towns. And with me is Hamish Crabb.
Hello, hello. I'm Hamish Crabb. I hope keep the podcast and the brokerage running smoothly.
Hamish, yeah. Jack of all things, and excellent at most things.
Most things. Pro modesty expert.
You know, it reminds me of another book I read a few years ago, and the title of that book, you don't need to read this whole book, but the title of that book was How You Do Anything is How You Do Everything. And it really shifted my perspective on not having rough drafts for life, try to do everything to a high standard. And I think that that philosophy is something I notice in you, too.
Thank you, Alice. That's really kind. Well,
with that said, so, our mission
yeah.
in this podcast is to help you make a smarter real estate decision. That also happens to be the mission of the House Einstein Brokerage. It's what makes us really different from all the other brokerages out there, the Compasses, the Remaxes, the Coldwell Bankers, the agencies, all the others that are mostly about having a shiny wrapper. We are mostly about serving you to our highest ability with the mission of helping you be smart about how you buy and sell, maximize market conditions to benefit your situation, choose property carefully, do your due diligence, engage in ways to prepare your home properly for sale, and those methods increase the sale price, minimize time on market, increase the probability of the deal actually closing, and many real estate deals don't actually close. So that's what we do here at House Einstein. And if you are a client thinking about buying or selling real estate and would like advice on your specific situation, you know where to reach us. And if you're thinking about becoming a client, you can find our contact information at houseeinstein.com. Not just mine, but the other agents on the team. And if you are not a client and you're just enjoying this podcast, or not a prospective client, you're just here listening with us today, thank you for joining us. But I'll remind you that this podcast is entertainment. Our attorneys prefer us to call it that because, well, we don't want you suing us in case you buy or sell or make an investment decision on the basis of this entertaining podcast that's simply here to make you laugh. We are not your real estate advisors unless you have engaged us to be your real estate advisors.
Absolutely.
So please keep that in mind.
Yeah. It's all jokes for the most part.
It's all yucks and jokes. That's all we do here.
Yeah. I'll put comedy for this one.
Comedy. We're in the comedy section. We're the funniest real estate podcast in the world. Welcome. All right. So in this podcast, let's run through our topics du jour. We're going to talk about market conditions, but unlike last week where we got into the actual data, I'm going to share some anecdotal aspects of what it's like to work in our local real estate market, as well as what the experience is like from a buy and sell side. We're going to talk a little bit about a listing that might be coming. We have not signed the listing agreement yet, but I think we probably will be. So I'll talk a little bit about some of the unique aspects of marketing that property without revealing the address. And then we'll talk about the sale of the week here in Boulder. We'll cover a few news items, including the recent multi-day power outage due to a high wind event.
There
was also some news about inflation that came out today that's caught some people off guard. The market is down, not the real estate market. The stock market is down as of the moment we're recording it. And then the last segment will be telling you something that you probably don't know. And then we're going to wrap it up. Perfect. That's about it for our topics du jour. Anything I'm forgetting, Hamish?
No, I think you nailed it all. I didn't realize the market was down. I'm looking. Oh, yeah, we're a bit down.
I've been in the cash position for a while and regretted not jumping back in earlier, 6 months ago, 8 months ago. And today could be a good day. Unfortunately, we have so much going on today that I don't know if I'm going to have time to place a trade, but I think it might make sense to dip my toe back in and start getting back into it. And we'll talk more about inflation and the stock market and the real estate market and high interest rates and what we think when we get to that segment of the news.
That's right. I'm getting ahead of myself here. Yep.
Well, we are, because it's very present at what's happening in the world in the stock market. When the S&P drops 1%, that catches your attention for sure. All right. So market conditions. The market is starting to warm up. It's our normal seasonal pattern here in Colorado. We are now in the month of April. And there are a lot more buyers starting to pile into the market, more listings coming. And for the next 2 months, that's what we'll be experiencing, with typically listings and contracts peaking around May, and you'll see that reflected in sales volume, and then it starts to drop. And then if you're not under contract by, let's say, middle of July, you missed the peak season, and now you're into a slower time of year. So typically sellers try to get them on the market now, to get their listings on the market now, to maximize that sale price and take advantage of a rising tide of buyers. It's not all bad news for buyers. Buyers also have more selection between now and, say, middle of May, early July. That's when you have the most homes on the market to choose from.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean the right house shows up, right, Hamish?
No. I got my house off season, I think. Well, no, towards the end of the on season, right in July. So winding down, but I mean, still multiple offers on it, so.
If you have the luxury of time, the autumn is often the best time to get a deal. But getting a deal on the wrong house because there weren't many to choose from is not a success in my book. I think you're better off overpaying for the right house than getting a great deal on the wrong house. But I might be in the minority of people who think that way.
Well, it's what makes us different.
Well, it's always our clients.
Yeah, go ahead. At the same time, right? Like I'm a rate sensitive buyer, so I saw the rates increasing. This house popped up. I thought it would be kind of fun to go check it out, and it ended up being exactly what I was looking for. So it all worked out, and it was towards the autumnal seasoning.
So. Right. Right. Just because statistically might mean the fall might be a better deal doesn't mean that'll work out for you. The best
that was approach the plan, is right?
It was, but yeah. I think the real plan, well, not the real plan, but the better plan is to start shopping early, get to know market conditions, kiss a lot of frogs, maybe, you know, take a shot at a listing and be a little more conservative on your offer just to find out that, no, it's true, your agent wasn't
really
lying,
have to try.
Yeah. That you're going to get blown out of the water unless you offer, you know, trying to offer a big discount on a brand new listing, you know, is usually a deal killer. You know, and then by the time the right house shows up and you're finally seasoned as a buyer, you know what to expect, you understand the contract, you can see what homes have been going for, and you're much more confident in your offer that you're getting a good deal. That's the preferred approach. But life gets in the way with this, right? Like life says, hey,
rates are also going up.
We got kids in school, yeah. And I don't want to deal with a double move. A double move of all of our stuff into a rental house, or half of our stuff into a storage unit, and then move it back in when we eventually find a house. That's miserable. I ain't got time for that. I want to enjoy living and not be moving twice in a year.
That's right. And I mean, same thing. We're kind of off topic a little bit, but same thing too. You're talking about like rather overpay for a good house versus getting yourself in a bad house. The good houses have multiple offers or have a lot of attention for a reason. And even if you overpay down the line in a few years, those offers are more likely to be present than a bad house, in the sense of like, and not more likely like it's in the data or it's a guarantee entertainment podcast, but generally it's a more appealing home, which is why it's got all the attention.
Probably. It could also be that the home that has been sitting on the market 2 months, the seller didn't properly prepare it for sale. Their agent did a bad job of advising them on repainting it, staging it. The photography was bad. There was a tenant inside. It smelled like dead fish. Whatever it is, all of those things could be fixed. And by the 2 months later, the seller is now serious. They've corrected the pricing. They've kicked out the tenant. They've fixed all the cosmetic wear and tear. They put in a new bathroom. They got rid of the dead fish. And now it's like a great deal. But everyone looks at it and is like, well, something must be wrong with the house. So don't automatically write off longer days on market. But it should be
That's true
a question too, yeah. mark. Why is this home not sold yet? And often the answer is simply overpricing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Pricing is a big factor. So,
I mean, sometimes the listing agent honestly just sucks at marketing. I mean, we see that, and I won't call out specific names, but I was just – one of our colleagues was just – she put a photo of one of her listings and one of the professionally taken photos, and it's a gorgeous photo, right? Mm-hmm. And she's like, agents, please stop putting like fake sunsets and really generic photos and like put some effort into this. Like, this is our job and you're doing such a poor job. And I'm getting really tired of reading all the listing descriptions written by ChatGPT. And I'm like, I get it. Mm-hmm. It's very tempting to just go with what ChatGPT wrote. You really should edit it a little bit and think about how, at a minimum, yeah. right? And a lot of agents aren't even using ChatGPT. I mean, that's just, I mean, it's not a surprise, okay? A lot of people are not on top of the latest technology, even if it results in massive productivity gains. But, I mean, you're hiring this person and you're paying them 2.8%, 3%, 3.2%, and sometimes more. One of our colleagues is talking about 4% yeah. as the new standard for her listings. I believe her. She's not into puffery.
Mm-hmm.
She includes a lot of additional services to justify her 4%, but a lot of agents don't, and it's astounding at how often people just choose a friend and don't actually do their homework on who's doing the work. But the reason we're bringing this up is don't automatically assume a stale listing is a bad house, just like you shouldn't automatically assume that a brand new listing with three people that are writing offers on it is a great house. It just might be priced really low.
Yeah, good point.
Or some random chance that two buyers want it at the same time that happen to have flown into town. But here's the anecdotal subjective experience of the market from a market participant. For the last decade, easily, the market has been extremely challenging for buyers. And all of our systems are geared up for fast response. So in addition to giving all of my clients my personal cell phone number, as well as email addresses, they get your contact information, Hamish, because right, if they yeah. can't reach me, I give them the imperative to call you if you're not hearing a response fast enough, because emails get lost, especially given how many we get every day and how much junk we get every day. And text messages sometimes aren't even going through either, so don't hesitate to reach out to us twice if necessary if you're not seeing a response. We also still have that, it costs me some money, but we have that automated system to just book me. Mm-hmm. You don't even, if you're a client, I give you the link, just book me. It will show up on my calendar. I live and die by this calendar.
Yeah, so
if it suddenly says, I never go to bed without looking at the next 2 days in my calendar, right? Mm-hmm. So if suddenly there's a meeting in my calendar, I'm like, wait a minute, what is this? Like, you caught my attention just by putting it on my calendar. So so that's what the last decade has been like. And just this past weekend, we missed the listing because it's tax season. My client's busy with focusing on their tax work. And I wasn't paying attention to every new listing that popped up. And there was a home that appeared in Fraser Meadows that actually would be a really good fit for this client. And by the time we realized it and messaged it to our buyer to, hey, we should go look at this, they weren't available on short notice and offers were due.
Mm.
It was too late. And that's literally 72 hours delay caused them to potentially miss a great house because we're busy looking at other things. So real estate is a game of paying attention and then also having systems that are hyperactive, like a fireman with a little glowing red light on your hood trying to get to
the
listing.
The moment that light flashes, it's go time.
Yeah, it's go time. You got to go. And if you're going to go on vacation, you better have somebody who's here that can cover your business and also has a sense of urgency to how the buy side is. But one of the things that I wanted to talk about anecdotally is the subjectively, anecdotally, you know, without all the data, but the hardest thing for people to buy in this market are those people that are coming here from outside of town.
Mm.
And they're trying to avoid that double move we just talked about. And they don't understand neighborhood market dynamics. A lot of agents don't understand it, especially if they don't work in those neighborhoods. And now they're trying to move themselves and their family here, sometimes spending millions of dollars and facing that double move, which is not going to be pleasant. So we realized this about, I don't know, 12 years ago, Hamish, well before your time, mm-hmm. that modern technology allows us to show a home remotely. And because on the buy side, we're not trying to sell it, right? Our mission is to help you make a smart decision as a buyer. We're looking for what's wrong. And over the last decade or so, these videos have gotten better and better and better. And now they're typically 30 to 45 minutes long for each house we do for a buyer. And they're on a gimbaled camera.
Usually longer, yeah.
Often longer. Yeah. They're gimbaled. We talk about what's the pros are, the cons of the home. We can go into pricing, but we usually wait on pricing because the assumption on pricing is the price is probably about right. And then when it's actually time to write an offer, we will sit down in the war room and go through the comps and go through what else sold in the last few months to see if this home passes the sniff test. It doesn't tell you what you should offer, but at least it tells you you're not being a complete fool when you write that offer and go over list. You actually are going over list within, you know, a reasonable benchmark.
Right.
Like yeah. like we did for our clients in Louisville. You weren't part of that, Hamish, but I, you know, we went through
the data. I saw the spreadsheets at least.
You saw the spreadsheets yeah. that suddenly I was sending out. I'm like, here's yeah. the median over list for this neighborhood and this property type in the last 12 months. So now you know if you're going way over the median that everyone else had to go, at least you're doing so not blindly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and at the same time, too, I mean, like, speed of the essence. We're talking about these videos. Since I've been here, going on 3 years, we've gotten a video back, I think, bar one, within 12 hours even. Typically, it's Osman.
We don't promise that.
No, but but my personal anecdote, I mean, we don't promise that. But I haven't seen bar, I think, one take longer than 12 hours. We're incredibly quick with it. Osman will usually be at the house showing it, and then I'll swing by for the footage, head back home. I've got a little faster upload speed being in the city, and we get it up and out. And if it's a super kind of desirable property, we'll go from 4K to 1080 just to save a few minutes just in that upload speed. But at this point, it's such an ironed out system. It's very satisfying to kind of be a part of and have all these moving pieces line up so well.
Yeah, and you've been part of so many videos, Hamish. Mm-hmm. For the record, if you are under a buyer agency agreement, you've chosen to work with us exclusively, and this service benefits you as a remote buyer, we will do these videos for you. And we don't put limits on the number of videos, but we will do a screen ahead of time.
On the property, yeah.
On the property. Like, are you sure you want to live next to a commercial building? Are you sure you want to live next to a grocery store or... it's a yellow line street. You know, there's maybe other issues with this property that we might be able to eliminate before we drop everything to go put together one of these videos, because it is like being a real estate fire person, right? Fire person, emergency response to a new listing. And,
it's nonstop. And
my normal promise to clients is 48 hours, but Hamish is right. We normally have these videos back to clients within 12.
Yeah. And that's 48, right? CYA. But we are so on top of it. So.
Well, set expectations and then exactly. exceed them.
Yeah.
And there is time between when they message and say, hey, what about this house? And then we have to look at it online. My preference is to schedule a quick video call and look at it together
mm-hmm.
and then say, okay, yeah, this makes sense. Let's go video it. And so we just did that this week for a listing in, let me see what I can share. In Table Mesa. Mm-hmm. This listing is not a brand new listing, but it seems to be priced right. They've now adjusted the pricing. It has some weirdness to it, and that's why I'm not mentioning the address, is I don't want to disparage this home, but the story of this home is it was occupied by a family because they modified some of the rooms and created closets in places for probably young children to live in. To sleep in those rooms. They added a basement kitchen, probably without a permit, and it's fully built out, right? Like there's a lot, and it shows
it's fantastic.
Like a home. I mean,
Yeah.
It's quirky. It's a quirky house. It looks like the owner had some carpentry skills of their own, or had family or friends that had some carpentry skills, maybe some electrical skills, did some things. Like, you know, there's signs, there's subtle signs. Like, there's one outlet that's just wonky. It's crooked.
Mm-hmm. Right? I didn't see it when we were there.
Oh. Like, my eye immediately went to it. I'm like, this outlet is off by about 10 degrees. It's like a, it's like listing to the right.
Yeah.
And what does that mean? Why is it listing 10 degrees to the right? All sorts of potential reasons, but most likely it was a homeowner that cut the hole in drywall without actually taking a square and making sure the lines were level on the drywall, right? Because you don't actually need to have the outlet against the stud. It's better if you do. I don't know what the code is, by the way. I'm not an electrician, but lots of people will just put in a it's called rework, you know, the box, the plastic box.
Old work and new work.
Old work, new work. You're right. Old work and new work. You can hang it in the drywall. But normally it's up against a stud. And if it's hanging crooked in the drywall, well, that just tells you that this is a homeowner that probably did this.
Also, maybe look into that.
Right. Well, open the box, right? Is it full of paper? Because if it's full of paper, meaning the paper insulation on the Romex, you have a fire risk there. So so our advice to our client on this particular house, which, again, we're not naming because it's an active listing, is that it might work for them. The price seems about right. It could fit their need for bedrooms and baths. It's in a good spot in the neighborhood. But they should plan for a bunch of secondary inspections over electrical. There's some signs of structural movement as well. There were cracks in places I didn't expect to see cracks, like cracks through solid tile, like large 12 by 12 pieces of tile in a line down the row. I'm like, well,
that's rough.
That looks like there's movement. And I don't know if it's just normal settling or something more significant. We have structural engineers and repair companies we recommend to evaluate those things. But anyway, the reason we're talking about all of this, we're like going on and on about a listing I can't even tell you the address of, is that it is still hard to find a house worth buying.
Yeah.
And it's even harder if you're relocating from another market. So talk to the agent you're thinking about hiring about the tools they potentially can employ for you to reduce your risk, increase your due diligence, even before you write the offer, advise you on pricing. All of those things are really important on the buy side. And those are services that most agents, frankly, just don't do. So you have to shop around to find agents that get it and value your money, not just for what it makes them and puts money into their wallet, but values the work you did or your family did to obtain those resources to buy the house, respects it, and wants to help you be smart about what you're buying.
Yeah. And not to mention, I mean, it's a huge kind of outlay of your trust to hire an agent that's all the way across the country and entrust them to kind of have a opinion on which house you should buy without even meeting in person face to face. And so these things that the services that we offer are kind of also an exercise in trust, because we're able to very transparently show the process of us going through the home, showing it. We have to disclaim, I think in this video we did it two or three times, that this isn't an inspection because we try to be so thorough and we work to make it, we're working to be extremely transparent and build that trust even further past the buyer agency that we have with our clients, because we really do take their, we're fiduciary, so we take their needs seriously, you know? Yeah,
and it comes back to that quote, Hamish, that I read at the beginning of the podcast, because honestly, it's kind of fun to look at homes with curiosity engaged when you see something strange. Like, what's the story of an outlet that's crooked? What's the fact pattern that would result in an outlet that's crooked? What's the fact pattern with a kitchen, full-blown kitchen in the basement, and a door with a deadbolt on it between the lower level and the upper level? What could, and also an exit from that lower level through the mudroom to the backyard and a pathway to walk around the side of the house. What could possibly be that story? Well, it's obviously most likely a rental. They rented the basement for additional cash flow.
Yeah. What's the fact pattern between this panel of switches that says don't touch and then these terminated wires we found 10 feet away?
That was a really good catch. Yeah. I didn't see that, Hamish. I was really glad you were there because that weird array,
yeah,
it was shaped in the same shape as the room above, the windows above. The
terminated wires trying to not speak says, too much
to
this property.
Do not touch. Yeah. And then you look up and you see all these wires up there with plastic wire nuts on them. You're like,
thanks for the sign.
Thanks for the sign. How about decommissioning all these live wires?
Or is it a sign selling it, too, on the whole listing side? I mean, that'd be a very... That's kind of a good opportunity to put a sign saying, you know, remote control access for this feature.
Right.
Yeah.
Remote control, hopefully low voltage, little motors that move the windows curtains up and down.
Yeah.
Or the window shades up and down. But if not, if it's high voltage wiring and there's a sign that says do not touch, I think the answer is it's live. And if I'm the listing agent, I'm like, look, we need to get an electrician here to remove this because it's going to come up on inspection. And if you're afraid a buyer is going to press a switch, you should just remove it rather than scare them.
Yeah.
And meanwhile, this helm's been on the market 40 plus days. I wonder why. Or, it's been on the market so long.
I mean, that could have just been marketed so much better, especially, I mean, I don't know the construction of that particular feature of the home, but even if it's, like, live and all the wires are terminated and nutted, then there's no reason to put a do not touch sign there. Let the buyer go Hamish. Hard.
Oh, no. There are no boxes. I looked up. We saw wires poking out. Okay, but still, it's not like live wires dangling out of drywall is really dangerous. Live wires that have been nutted and inside of a junction box are probably safe. I'm not an electrician, but I would feel better about that. But a sign that says "Do not touch," right? It's like a house burn down switch, right? It says burn down the house on or off, and there's a little sign that says "Do not touch" next to it. Like,
yeah. Yeah, or just, you know, a sign highlighting that that will eventually be quite a nice feature, especially the way the panel is arrayed and everything. Like, it could have just been sold better. Yeah.
100%. If you're on the sell side, there are things you can and should do to help your seller not scare buyers. Mm-hmm. And one of those things is sell it. Like, let's make it safe.
Yeah.
And let's make sure, or let's better yet, install the window coverings with the motor and the switches. Let's fix this problem.
Yeah.
And then sell it. Instead, you've just scared buyers away. They're running away, worried about a house that self-destructs.
Okay. we double down on that subject.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So those are market conditions. And this is, so the point of all of that is that this is the spring season. Buyers need to be aggressive, and buyers shopping remotely need to be aggressive as well. It doesn't mean you should jump on something just because it's a new listing. Mm. And we'll have a very different conversation in the fall when we're looking at stale listings and negotiating big discounts and how to sift through homes that potentially are good low offer targets. Right now, it's all about speed and aggressiveness to get the right house because you're likely to have more competition between buyers at this time of year. Because even though inventory is rising and even though there's more selection, historically, there's more buyers entering the market. The growth in buyers is steeper than the growth in listings. So the competition for new listings increases between now and mid-June.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. And I just came up with our title.
What's that? Our title for the podcast?
Yeah. Time is of the essence.
Time is of the essence. I love it. That's a good one. It's a little long.
Yeah.
But I like it. It may not fit on the thumbnail. All right. So those are market conditions, little anecdotes, little insights into some what's musings. Actually happening, and for which I can easily show data if people want to see data on how the market swings in the spring.
Mm-hmm.
Let's shift to our next segment.
Yeah.
And it does dovetail with what you were suggesting, Hamish, which is turn around something potentially negative and turn it into a positive. And so we have a potential new listing coming up in Uptown Broadway. This is a neighborhood that our office is located. And the new library has been, I would say, widely perceived by the neighborhood as a negative because of the potential risk it has of becoming a magnet for those people experiencing homelessness. And some of the neighbors have already anecdotally told me that they've seen things people using drugs on the streets, a lot more increase in trash. I switched out the light bulb in my office doorway to be one that turns on with motion, because if somebody decides to relieve themselves in that doorway in the middle of the night, that light hopefully will scare them away. We put on window coverings on our office as well. With for years, we didn't have it. So let's not kid ourselves. 100%, the risk of the library becoming a magnet to attract people experiencing homelessness and hanging out in the street is real.
Mm-hmm.
And at least the fear is real. I don't know. Fear, what do they say, is the mind killer?
But yeah.
fear is not reality necessarily. And the new library has all sorts of features that might benefit community members. It might be amazing and it might be cool.
I have one material downside to it, though. It blocked our view of the Flatirons.
You're taking it personally, Hamish, but we never owned the view.
No, we didn't.
We never owned the view. It was a gorgeous view. I knew someday it might disappear, and it has. From the end of our street, it's no longer there. You just got to walk a little to the west, and there it is.
Back again.
Go for a hike or run on the Wonderland Lake open space. There it is. It's one of the best views in the city, but straight down our street, you no longer have that view.
Yeah.
We have a very triangular
granted, it's pyramid-like. Not a box, and thank you, Boulder, for not building a box, but... Yeah.
Well, okay, so that new library could be really cool. Mm-hmm. And BMOCA has selected where Red's Liquor is currently as its future site for a new building. It's seeking proposals for new buildings. So we're going to get a new museum right there as well. And the whole arts district concept appears to be taking shape and getting momentum. There are all these things about that location that are actually really positive, including another thing I just mentioned, the open space access to Wonderland Lake, mm-hmm. which is widely perceived as some of the most attractive views in the city, with picture perfect down to the Flatirons views.
Seriously.
Very pretty, relatively flat trails. It's really nice. And when we list this home, if we list this home, those are the things we're gonna focus on. We're gonna turn around any perception of the library. We're not gonna pretend the library is not there. We're gonna talk about what's happening at the library. We're gonna talk about the new art center, the new museum. We're gonna talk about the open space access. We're gonna talk about the skip that runs down Broadway every 15 minutes.
Yeah.
We're also gonna talk about the lack of students. That you're not living in a student ghetto like a lot of places. Sorry, pardon that term. It sounds bad. Okay.
You want me to mark that? Okay, I'll mark that.
No. I mean, I'm a very direct person. The word ghetto meant something when I was growing up, and today it could be perceived maybe as insensitive or racially charged or something. And maybe it's not the right term, okay? So let me back up a little bit. You're not living right next to high student density with all of the joyful things that students do, like playing beer pong in the front yard and throwing parties with loud music and setting off fireworks. And
which you weren't invited to.
And putting out there, that we're not invited to. Well, you might get it. You're still young enough. I'm like old enough to be their dad.
You're away from
cigars
the ruckus.
Cigars in planters outside on the patio, which burned down one of the buildings at Gold Run.
No way.
Like, so all of these things, right, are the joy that students bring. So Uptown Broadway and Holiday and Dakota Ridge have very low student density.
Yeah. Just by fact of location. Yeah.
And the properties are newer, and the ceilings are taller, the insulation is better, the finishes and fixtures are higher quality, almost luxury quality. At least they were when they were built. It's a nice development. There's a reason I bought there. Years ago, I thought it made a lot of sense, and now that momentum is finally taking shape. So this new listing, I'm excited. I hope we get the listing. It's a two-bedroom, one-bath with a one-car garage. It's perfect for a lot of different types of buyers, and I'm excited if we do get the listing to do videos on it and photography on it. You could see the quality of the work we do, by the way, in all of our listings, including the listings that are well below a million. We still are producing incredibly high quality. You only see that stuff, Hamish, on like $4 million listings. You don't see it on $650,000 condos in Aurora.
I'm desensitized at this point, right? Because I am the person making the videos, so I'm like, sure we do. I do the videos, but no, it's a dang bonus for us, so absolutely.
Well, you don't, I mean, just say, do you do a lower standard? So here's the thing, right?
That's another thing, too.
If the home... is an older home and has not been updated, our video might talk a lot about other things than the inside of the home. We may not do slow motion, you know, 3-axis gimbal shots of the stove.
Yeah.
If it's a 1980s electric coil stove, I'm sorry.
Unless it's really cool.
That doesn't make any... Right. But if you have this amazing Viking appliance and you have the latest, coolest stuff in the home, we're going to feature that in slow motion 3D, 3-axis gimbal sexy shots, as we like to say.
Mm-hmm.
But if not, maybe we're going to talk about the location benefits, all the other aspects of what make this home special than your 1950s stove.
Yeah. Yeah. No,
we, or 1950s bathtub in green.
The video work and our angle, our eye, our, I don't want to, obsession has a negative connotation, but our care towards story and expression when it comes to a home, I think, is really important and kind of what allows us to showcase homes in, you know, 60 different ways if we so choose, and really pick out the best features and the most compelling parts of it. So it's a, yeah, it's a really fun thing to be a part of, and almost like a mental experiment, but not quite, because it's fun, and mental experiments can be tough too. So, but
well, here's a secret for the agents that are listening to this podcast. Ask your seller.
Yeah.
What are the top selling features of the house?
Why did you buy the house?
They often will know things you don't, and things that can be really helpful in the marketing of that home.
Mm-hmm.
And we always, in my first 3 years in the business, I didn't think to do that. I'm like, oh, well, we'll just come up with our list. And then now it's a standard practice that we talk to our sellers about what are the most compelling features of your home that you personally feel would help sell it.
Yeah. And favorite restaurants and stuff too. And I think we're both foodies, so it helps out on that front too. We're like, oh, I've never been there.
I still haven't had a breakfast burrito at that place that our client Andrew recommended. It's on my list.
Yeah, me either.
To have one of those. All right, let's move on.
Yeah, we are.
Sale on of. Time. We're going slow, aren't we?
Yeah. Chatty.
We're going to speed up. Yeah, we're chatty. Okay, sale of the week, 485 College Avenue. So, our sale of the week feature is designed to talk about a listing that recently sold for which there may be something to learn from the deal.
Mm-hmm.
And this one caught my eye. It just closed April 5th, which was 5 days ago. And the home, so this is in Boulder, College Avenue, 485 College Avenue. It was listed on February 16th at 2.3. It was on the market for almost a full month, 28 days before the status changed. Technically, agents have 3 business days to change status, so let's call it a little more than 3 weeks before they got an offer that they were willing to work with. That offer was accepted, and it closed at 2.255. So let's do the math on the numbers. 2255 over 2300 minus the 1. It's straight up the fairway, 1.95% below. So basically 2% below list.
Right on.
So 1 to 3 is what I often tell my sellers to potentially expect. I'm not saying that that's always the case, but if you looked at the data, you would see that seasoned listings that are not stale listings, but ones that have been on the market a few weeks, often will sell for 1 to 3% below list. That's right in the middle of the median. 2% is maybe even a little bit more aggressive. And this particular house, if you're looking at it online, you can click the link in the show notes on YouTube. And this house was built in the 1960s, the early 1960s. And it's a 2-story home, 2,400 square feet. It's at the location, it is at the very end or the very west side of College Avenue. So one of the issues with College Avenue, as well as the name implies, there's a lot of students. But the further west you go, the higher the prices go. And therefore, at some point, you start to see far fewer students. And that major break is 9th Street. As soon as you cross 9th Street, the student density starts to really drop. And then the hill starts to climb. You get to start getting a little bit more elevation. You start to get better views. And this location is pretty prime. The sellers acquired the home in 2019 for $1.65. They paid full list, and their agent was really aggressive at the time. I think it might have even been in-house. Like, they sold it to somebody that I don't even know if it actually made it to the open market. And we've talked about pocket listings before. I don't want to go too far down the road because I don't really know what happened. But it was, you know, it looks like it sold in one day, which usually means these people had a head start on it in 2019. This is also before the fair cooperation rules that were brought down on the real estate community.
Brought down.
Or at least the beginning phases, right? You weren't compelled to do that. But the real estate commission realized that people leave money on the table.
That's the reason sellers, why you shouldn't.
That's the reason why you shouldn't, without a very close review of comparable sales, deep trust in your agent, and maybe a consultation with your spiritual advisor too, because you're probably leaving a lot of money on the table. But these people, they bought the house for 1.65, and they closed on that in May of 2019. So that was 5 years ago, roughly. Almost 5 years ago. Mm-hmm. It looks like they did, I mean, it was described as a major remodel, but looking at the difference in the photos, it looks like a cosmetic remodel to me. There's no square footage change. In some cases, they...
From 2019?
Say that again.
When was this change? Sorry.
They acquired the home in May of 2019. Okay, yeah. Right? Mm-hmm. It sold for $2.255, so that's an increase in value of, whatever, $600,000? Let's do the actual math. $2,255 minus $1,650. So, yeah, $605,000 increase. My guess is they put, and I'm just going to be generous and say they put $200 into it. They probably, the kitchen's all new for sure. Mm. Kitchens are expensive, especially here in Boulder. But otherwise, it looks mostly like paint. Maybe some mild updates, maybe some drywall work, but it's not $600,000 worth of work. Like, the bathrooms got updated too at the same time. I don't know if permits were pulled. We didn't go that far down the rabbit hole, but I would guess this is a $200,000 remodel, and that's generous. And so they still had a $400,000 upside on the resale of the home. It was on the market, as I mentioned, a month, discounted about 2% to sell. And a small additional concession of, ooh, not even that small, $61,000. Wow. So the real sale price, so if you, in the MLS agents, if you're looking, you should always check for the additional concessions. So the net sale price of this home, $2,255 minus $61,000, which I guess would be just $61,000. So that's $2,194. So basically it sold for $2.2. Still... pretty good return for the seller, having lived in the home for a six-year period, to clear about $600,000 before commissions.
That's right.
They obviously liked their agent. They chose them again. And an agent from a different brokerage represented the buyer. So here's the thing about the house, right? Three bedrooms on the upper, which is classic floor plan. Three baths, that's considered adequate. Great location. Doesn't have a garage, which is probably why it took a month to find a buyer.
I still haven't noticed. I'm looking through all the pictures and everything and didn't even pick that up.
Yeah. Yeah. No garage. I mean, spending $2 million and not getting a garage. What percentage, Hamish, do you think of our buyers, now that you've been with a brokerage almost 3 years, what would you say that percentage of buyers would be like, I'm cool with no garage?
We've, I think, one, and we just got, like, we're just now talking to them. We're kind of feeling things out, and I think they're the only ones that are like, hey, maybe not. We could do without.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
I mean, sometimes if there's a shed or something like that, you might be able to get away with it, but people that move here have bicycles, they have camping gear, they have skis. Toys,
yeah.
Even if they don't need their personal vehicle parked inside the garage, they usually want the other stuff in the garage. So I'll be generous and say 5% of buyers are willing to accept a $2 million home without a garage.
Tough sell. I mean, like, even the renters that I talk to and everything, a garage is pretty crucial.
Right.
Yeah.
Right, 100%. Now, they had, if you read the notes of this listing, the old listing talks about how the garage was converted. Mm. So it says office was the garage, right? Mm-hmm. So there's a good chance that was done without a permit. So the office, if you look at these photos, any photos of an office, that is what was the garage. So,
oh, that makes sense.
Maybe the argument. Yeah, it is. Oh, there it is. So there are photos of the office, and you can see they've replaced the garage door with a big slider. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it's possible that room could be used for gear storage, but. So herein is the challenge, right? Let's say you bought this house thinking, all right, I want to put in a garage. Well, the city's going to say, you already have a garage. What do you mean you're putting in a garage, right? Because the work, I don't know for a fact that that's the case, by the way. The work could have been completely with a permit. And if you look at the sliding, so here you need 2 off-street parking spaces per the city. And those spaces cannot be front to back. They have to be side to side. And that's why so many Martin Acres homes have unpermitted garage conversions. So unpermitted garage conversions are super common. Middle of the night, convert the garage into an office. Could be what happened here.
Yeah.
Because I can't quite tell if that driveway is side by side would have 2 cars. You have to do a site visit for all of this. But the point I'm trying to make is that you should go in with eyes wide open with this type of circumstance. Don't assume just because it's a 7,500 square foot lot that you'll be able to add a garage. And you may, if you bring the city in to go, hey, what do you think of us adding a garage? You may find yourself deconstructing the
office,
the unpermitted garage conversion, and replacing that sliding glass door with a proper garage door.
That should be brutal. Yeah.
I don't know. Now, let me be clear. I don't know if any of that's true for this house, okay?
Yeah.
But that's...
Some due diligence points for any prospective buyers.
What did our friend Steven say? Be curious. Let your curiosity lead you. He said, is the key to sustaining well-being? Well, I'll tell you, if you buy this house and not knowing those things, and you had this dream of adding a garage or doing other work, and the city inspectors see what you've done and just make you take it down, that might have a serious impact on your well-being. And so I'm going to go ahead and go to the city website, right? This is how fast it is. When your agent's like, oh, I don't know if I can get you any permit history, let me just, you know, start the timer. Okay, City of Boulder, I'm on the website right now. I'm not sharing screen. Maybe I should. Well, let me just share screen. Why not? Pause the timer. Share screen. Entire screen. Sure, why not? Share. Okay. What's the address, Hamish?
It is 4085, or it's 485
College Ave. 485
College.
Yeah. Search. Click on permit. Sort by finalized date or issued date. I don't know why it's ascending. We want to see the most recent ones first, so descending. The most recent permit was 2011. It got something to do with the HVAC system. Don't need to go more detailed. There was a remodel permit pulled in 2008. So that's a good sign. Mm-hmm. It included an electrical sub permit. So the work that was done, there was some work done in 2008. There's another, this is a letter of completion for the remodel in 2008. But that doesn't mean that, so just because it was a permit pulled in 2008 doesn't mean that permit included converting the garage into living space.
Yeah, and you'd want to probably contact the city official for more detail on that.
Well, so that's what we used to do, is actually go with our client to the permitting office, to the building department. But now you need an appointment. It's more complicated. But still, it's worth doing, especially with a $2 million purchase, to go down the rabbit hole. And the permit, one of the 2 permits with letters of completion, says construction of an exterior concrete stairway, retaining wall, and entrance to a lower-level photography studio, to include electrical, associate electrical. So this lower level photography studio could have been the garage. It's quite possible, right? This 100% could be an okay situation, but it may not be. And your goal with doing due diligence is to do so to the buyer's satisfaction and make sure their future plans, can be accommodated. So the other permit issued in 2008, this one's in January, and finalized later that year, says interior remodel of basement to install egress windows and relocate wall separating basement from garage installation of utility sink. So the question is this photography studio, which was a 2011 finalization date, issued in 2008, finalized in 2011, was that the garage? Or is that something else? So that's what I mean by due diligence being a bottomless rabbit hole. Mm-hmm. Like, you start to go down this, and until the buyer, let me stop sharing, ooh, infinity, until the buyer is satisfied. And if their future plans include a garage, you really want to understand if that's possible or not. Or is the city going to say, hey, your garage is that.
It's got to come back.
Yeah, you got to take that sliding glass door out or whatever nonsense is required to make the city happy.
Okay, that's sale of the week. We have quite a few news items to cover and tell you something you might not know as well.
That's true, yeah. Hamish. So thank you so much. We are clearly, this podcast is going to run a little late. Hopefully not too late. We're going to go a little faster. So
I'm looking at your drive block coming up. So we got to make that.
Oh, right. Yeah. We have to meet the client at 3. So we literally have to wrap up in 15 minutes or less. Although you could get there a little bit before me. So let's move fast.
Okay.
What happened in the news, Hamish?
Well, recently we had, across Boulder County, I think we saw up to like 90-mile-an-hour winds over the weekend, which really hindered one's want to go out and recreate, though it also opened up risks for more fires. Those who are impacted by the Marshall Fire, I know one person that I'm quite close with, she was really worried, and it brought back a lot of unhappy memories with the howling winds and then subsequently the fire. So as a reaction to that, XL preemptively cut power in certain areas across Boulder County, and it was for an extended period of time. Osman, you were affected by that?
We had winds that were about 90 miles an hour. NCAR recorded winds that were almost 100 miles an hour. And power, which was preemptively shut off throughout the city of Boulder and in other places, Lewisville, other parts of Boulder County, including our house, we didn't have power for a couple of days. No big deal for us because we have a battery backup system, a propane generator, and we're operating on Starlink, so we're not even reliant on any above-ground power lines or above-ground utility lines for even the internet. But a lot of people were, and a lot of people were surprised, and the governor has ordered the Public Utility Commission to investigate, given how unhappy people are. Probably hundreds of thousands of dollars of food were destroyed in that process in people's refrigerators. And it's really astounding how unprepared people were for this type of event. But given that the city and maybe the county too have not gotten XL to underground lines, despite saving money for it, we're now looking at this. And I don't know if there'll ever be accountability for how our undergrounding money has not been utilized or has been used for other things. But I sure hope there's an investigation, because this was a foreseeable issue. And in the face of increasing climate change, increasing speed of climate change, fire, wind, flood, resiliency in these systems is really important. And it's something we talk about with our buyers, particularly in the mountains. But I think, Hamish, we need to start talking with our buyers about this outside the mountains altogether, too. Like, you can't rely on the grid. And if you're buying a home, you may want to think about hardening it for fire risk, wind risk, loss of utilities, and it sounds very preppery. Yeah. But
and I'd like to also add, I mean, my perception as well, as I would love to expect to be able to rely on utility services and public services, and I think we should honestly be adding more pressure for that to be figured out, like you mentioned with the undergrounding and the funds there, though it doesn't hurt to also be prepared yourself or have some sort of contingency plan.
Right.
Yeah.
So reporters, if you're listening to this, the question is, where did the money go for undergrounding?
Yeah.
Didn't we have a settlement with XL over our municipal utility, and wasn't a lot of money supposed to be spent for undergrounding? But even before that lawsuit and that settlement, there was money for undergrounding. What's going on with those plans? How much progress has been made? And why do we still have so many lines above ground?
Right. I mean, we could go, we could get really sassy about this. But Osman, you continued to have power because of your propane and generator system. I know last week we were talking with an electrician about battery backups and solar systems and the possibility of using that in the event of an outage. And I personally have been looking at that option too. So there's different avenues to power your home when public utility services decide to turn you off.
For $800, you can buy a lithium camping battery with outlets that you can plug in your normal household appliances into, and you could literally run a camping generator for 4 hours, charge this, bring it inside, and let it discharge on the fridge. The fridge is probably pulling 60 watts. You might get 8 hours of use out of this and then charge it again, mm-hmm. but you wouldn't lose all your food if you had this type of solution. So even if your home isn't equipped with a whole house generator, there are other ways to potentially stopgap the loss of food, also potentially have internet. Depending on the setup, you may need to power your well so you can if you have well in the mountains or where there isn't. Yeah, you're about to say something.
Well, and hey, our awesome listing 605 Alpine Ave has a Tesla Powerwall and Tesla solar roof. So if you're, right. you know, find yourself out of power, what better place than 605 Alpine Ave?
Thank you, Hamish. You. That's a great point. Our amazing listing at 605 Alpine already has a whole house backup. Mm-hmm. Don't even need to burn gas. You've got solar and a Tesla wall. You've got
electric heat too.
You've got solar shingles, which is our first listing with solar shingles. Okay, we are almost out of time, so we've got to go really fast over this inflation topic, Hamish. So I'm just gonna rip through it really fast and then hit the tell you something you don't know.
Yeah.
So inflation just came in much higher than expected. And the stock market, as a consequence, took a dive. You can see all the data on how the inflation report measured up compared to what was expected. And this is a topic much more suited for your investment advisor, but you may want to think about how higher rates could be here for longer, and what the likely response of the U.S. government is to incredible record amounts of debt that we have to service at higher rates. And almost certainly that is a response that involves printing more money, which is inflationary. So this is one of these doom loops where higher inflation drives higher rates, drives more printing money, drives higher rates. So that eventually trickles out to higher salaries, but certainly higher consumer goods. And historically, real estate has been the classic inflation hedge. So all these people that are gloating about how their rent is cheap compared to buying probably won't be gloating when that changes quickly. And it probably will change as time goes on. If they're lucky enough to lock in something, they may get away with renting at a much lower cost. But in the long run, wealth is built through ownership of the asset, not renting it in most cases. But Hamish, you wanted to talk about shrinkflation
a little bit
as well.
Yeah. Well, I may be getting like a little conspiracy, and it's a good thing there isn't a lot of time here. During the pandemic, there was a lot of cries about all of the stimulus packages causing inflation. And very quickly, the concept of inflation was normalized. And I think it also gave an avenue for a lot of companies who weren't necessarily impacted by the supply chain issues and by the pandemic itself to also raise prices and call it, oh, well, that's inflation, or, oh, that's the supply chain command. And I don't have it on the top of my head, but a report did come out that a pretty significant market share has just risen prices because they could. And they can all go and point. And,
you mean corporations have corporations, risen prices because they could.
Yeah.
Okay, got it.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And that's just a kind of a factor, and it's still not really talked about. Like, shrinkflation is a term that's been thrown around now, and Osmond, I had to look it up. It was coined in 07.
2007. Yeah. Okay.
Or 08, 07, around there. And, I mean, we can... There's a lot of criticism flying everywhere and very politically motivated, but at the same time, remember that if a corporation can make more money, they're going to. And if we normalize a concept like inflation and then don't track it or track the price, you know, we got to also hold everything around us accountable too. And I just think it's worth mentioning.
Well, I'll give you a little example.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you got
this
one on hand.
A can of Pellegrino bubble water. It is 11.15 fluid ounces. It's not a 12-ounce can.
Not anymore.
It's an 11.15 fluid ounce can. It's also a sexy skinny can. So the way that you sell shrinkflation is in sexy packaging, because it's not obviously the cost of the water. It's the weight of the water that probably drives more of the cost savings for whatever company owns S. Pellegrino.
Yeah, no good point.
So shrinkflation is real. It's out there.
Mike and Ike's are
candy
smaller.
Bar sizes. Yeah. Right. Are another classic example. You get less product for the same price. And it's all the hidden ways that we are experiencing inflation that are quite painful. But in the long run, back to real estate, yeah. Historically, real estate is a hedge. It's a safety zone for inflation. And it usually tracks. The values usually track with inflation, even in a market that is kind of middling along. But one of the key differences in real estate is that some markets, like Boulder, have a lot of cash buyers. Mm-hmm. And other markets, like, say, Colorado Springs, the entry level in Colorado Springs is very monthly payment sensitive. The confounding factors are that monthly payment sensitivity is tempered by complete lack of availability of inventory at the entry level.
Yeah.
Right? There's almost nothing to buy at the entry level. And at the high end, there's more homes to buy, but those buyers are less monthly payment sensitive. So what does that all mean for the future? I think that on average, perhaps there's an argument that real estate is due for a correction on average nationally, but there is no national real estate market. Real estate is hyper-local.
Yeah, location.
Even within the location, there's differences in price range, property type, down to street level. And without that local level of digging into it, without digging into it deeply and having a lot of time on your hands, you won't be able to tell the differences between one market from another. And that's one of the reasons to choose to work with people that have your best interests in mind and can help you understand what's going on.
That know their business.
All right. So that hopefully know their business. Yeah. Okay. Let's move on. I think we'll need to call that client, Hamish, and let them know that we're running a few minutes late.
Okay.
Let's hit tell you something you don't know. And this is hyper local. It's something I didn't know until recently. There is a new nonprofit. I don't know how new it is, but there's a nonprofit here in the city of Boulder that is solving a major problem in our arts scene. And as some of you know, I'm on the board of the Dairy Arts Center here in Boulder, and I care a great deal about arts. It's only recently I had the opportunity to invest more of my time in service of that interest. But the Roots Project, I attended a show last night put on by the Roots Project. Their mission is to sort of bridge the gap. So some of you old-time Boulder residents might remember that we used to have a lot more live music venues. We used to have more opportunities for musicians to get on stage, build an audience, and
make a name
potentially
for
make even a profession.
Yeah.
Yeah, make a name for yourself, right? How do you do that without already having a following? How does a new band get together and say, okay, where can we go perform live for an audience without already having that audience? Mm. And the Roots Project is a nonprofit that is seeking to bridge that gap. And for a very reasonable fee last night, I think our tickets were only $20, we watched a qawwali performance, which is a form of music that is devotional music for Sufi Muslims, which is the mystical branch of Islam. What were the odds?
Yeah.
I can't imagine this band, right, coming to Boulder, this group of musicians, without the Roots Project, and the event was sold out. It was really beautiful and a lot of fun, and I'm really grateful for these entrepreneurs, these social entrepreneurs that created the Roots Project. That was my first experience with it. I noticed that there were other Dairy board members and participants of the Dairy in the audience enjoying the show last night. It was a lot of fun, and this little organization, I'm really excited to learn more about. We'll put a link in the show notes to an article about it from Yellow Scene Magazine, which can give you more details, because we need to wrap up now. Yep.
And speaking of wrapping up, if you made it this far along, thank you so much. Don't forget to like the podcast wherever you're listening or watching. If you are listening from a podcast service, go ahead and check out our YouTube channel, House of Einstein. We've got pretty much all of the videos that we reference to. You can check out 605 Alpine Ave. You can see 1065 Uinta Way if you're looking in the Denver area. We're also on other social media, fairly active on Instagram and Facebook. And of course, thank you so much for joining us. Well, newsletter too. monthly when there's not client duties actively happening and we have the time.
Thanks for the call out. Yeah. Thanks for the exit on why there was no newsletter last month.
Yep. Clients first. We put together a fantastic newsletter authored almost entirely by Osman. I'll get his double spaces. That's basically his big typos. But other than that, it's a fantastic resource to take an even deeper look into Boulder Market, see some active listings that we can't otherwise comment on. And you can find that in our website at the top. Select newsletter and tell us a little bit about yourself. And we work to kind of do little call outs and see if we can tailor a certain piece to you, if possible.
Yeah. Thanks so much for listening or watching us. If you see us on YouTube, we deeply appreciate your comments, your feedback. And if you want to learn more about us, houseeinstein.com is the place to do so. If you're a client, you already know our phone numbers. That's the best way to reach us. We hope you have a great week, and we'll catch you next time.
Take care.